order. The record reflected is 3:04 p.m., and we are in room 124. Today is Tuesday, February the 1st, which is amazing to believe we're already into February. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. The members present today are Representative Peterson, Representative Sadler, Representative Tuck, Representative Lynn, my co-chair, Representative Foster, and myself, Representative Pruitt. I'll start by asking everyone to please turn off your Blackberries or cell phones if you have them. There's also some concern that maybe if they're not off, they're just on vibrate, they might cause some concern with the sound equipment, so your respect with that would be greatly appreciated. On today's agenda, we are pleased to have presentations on the emerging energy or the emerging technology and the renewable energy funds by the Alaska Energy Authority. I also want to point out to you two separate things. The members, you should have a copy of the that was just released, I guess, right up to the deadline of the energy report to the legislature. Please take that and at your convenience read that. We will be coming back to it in this committee fairly soon, I expect. I also want to do kind of a little personal order here myself. I think it's worth noting that there is a new director of the AEA, and she is here with us today. Sarah Fisher-Gode has been promoted, per se, to that position, and I think a very wise choice, and we expect to spend a lot of time with her. I congratulate you on that appointment. Starting first, we have Barbara Triplett. Did I pronounce that correct?
Yes.
Okay. If you would, please come forward and introduce yourself and your affiliation, and if you would like to ask any questions as we go along, I'd ask that the members just wait until the end of the presentation, and we'll ask her then. All right. Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Barbara Triplett, and I am the program manager for the Emerging Energy Technology Fund at the Alaska Energy Authority. And this afternoon, I'm going to be kind of giving a status update of where we are on that. So first of all, we wanted to make sure that we all understand the objective, which is to promote the expansion of energy sources available to Alaskans. We're going to be doing this through grants made to eligible applicants for demonstration projects that have a reasonable expectation to become commercially viable within a five-year time horizon. The goals that we've set forth in order to do that are to have a clear and rigorous application and review process, constructive technical and economic oversight of the projects, and to develop entities to continue the deployment once we have proven forth the technologies. The reason that we are going through such a rigorous process and put these things into implementation is we want to make sure that we have a robust portfolio of projects for this fund. With that, we are using a strategic technology evaluation program. By this, we're actually using a three-pronged approach when we evaluate the projects as they're coming in. We'll be evaluating them not only on the technology, but also on the marketability and on things surrounding the legal portion, regulations, statute, policies, things such as that. So we're also going to be providing explicit requirements for both the abstracts and for the applications. So when they come in, we've got everything stated out, very rigorous process, so that we can go through and evaluate each of these abstracts and each of these proposals with a very intense look at the proposals and make the best selections possible. Now, as the process goes along, we've put out an RFA on January 7th, and we are expecting all of those initial applications to be coming in. The deadline is March 2nd. From there, we will be receiving those. We'll be doing a first round, first stage evaluation of those. From that, we're going to have a cutting point where we take those project applications and we ask for a full-blown project proposal. With that, it's a little bit more intense requirements that they're going to need to go through and provide back to us. Once we get the formal proposals back, we will be again taking those, ranking those, determining what our final recommendations are going to be, and then do a final selection. From there, we're going to be going forward and actually granting out the money for the various projects, doing kickoff meetings. Also, doing the grantees will be doing the project execution. And from there, once the projects are in, we will be doing reporting, and there's going to be a reporting and a review process, and that's going to be done primarily by third-party oversight. So we're going to be utilizing different entities such as the UAF's Alaska Center for Energy and Power, the National Renewable Energy Lab, and National Energy Technology Lab to help provide some of that third-party oversight, validate some of the performances and the economic evaluations that are coming in, make sure that the technology is what we're thinking it should be. And
Mr. Chair, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry about that. And it's the previous slide. What does EDDCFCC stand for, real quick? I know what AEA stands for. The recommendations, too.
Thank you.
The executive director.
And
Denali Commission.
Okay.
Co-chair.
Joel Niemeyer.
Joel Niemeyer, yeah.
And then the FCC is part of the Denali, is that part of the Denali Commission title?
Yes, that's that. Yes,
so
it's
the
is.
Same group.
It's the same group.
Okay.
Yes.
Federal co-chair.
Federal co-chair.
Federal co-chair. Thank you.
Yeah, that's something worth clarifying there.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Please continue.
All right. So, upon completion of the projects, that's kind of the last part. What we want to do is actually disseminate this information, all these emerging technologies that are proving themselves. We want to help provide a way for that to get out to the marketplace, and that's all part of this process. So because we don't know exactly what projects are coming in, it's kind of a morphing concept at this point, but as we know which projects we're going to be moving forward, we can kind of rein that in. So the last slide shows a tentative timeline for what we're looking at. As I said, the request for applications went out in January. We're expecting them to come back at the first part of March, going through doing a first stage selection, asking them for full proposals, going through those proposals, providing the advisory committee providing recommendations, and then just a final selection. After that, we'll get the ball rolling on those that make the cut.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And when you do the notice of applications, how is that done? Do you notify every community in the state of Alaska, or how does one find out that there's like an open season for the request?
through the chair. Representative Tuck, we actually put out on our website, we have a place where people have actually signed up on a listserv. And so anybody who's interested in emerging energy technologies, people who would be interested in this, the press release went out to all of them, as well as all of the associated working groups that are out there. So that's how the information has been disseminated so far.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Yeah. Please continue.
And that's it. Do you have any questions?
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How many proposals do you currently have in the hopper?
Representative Foster, right now we do not have any formal, we do not have any proposals that have come in yet. Uh-huh. We have had a lot of inquiries about it. If it is par for the course, probably January 1st and 2nd, everything will start to roll in.
Thank you.
March 1st and 2nd.
March 1st and 2nd, yeah.
I have a couple questions. Separate from the what you have here as guidelines for the use, what do you expect to see? What kind of and what do we expect would be the types of programs that the committee would pass through? Do they have guidelines that maybe they may not be published or something like that that they think are more viable that they'll be looking at?
Right now, we've kind of cast a wide net.
Okay.
So we're open to everything. So we've left it very broad. So everything from energy production, storage, transmission controls, energy efficiency, energy conservation. So right now, we're just we're looking for any type of emerging energy technology.
Okay. Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What kinds of inquiries have you been receiving, what kinds of projects are you seeing that people are calling about with the inquiries, I should say?
Most of the through the chair, Representative Foster, most of the inquiries have actually been going through our grants administrator, through Butch White. From what I have been told, there's kind of a whole array, everything from different types of fuel cells to different type of geothermal projects. So it's been a wide array of projects that have been requesting information.
Thank you.
Great. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if you've been getting inquiries about groups who've applied in the past but were turned down and they may have changed their request for grants, or just does that type of thing happen?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, I have not, because I haven't received any of the questions directly, I can't answer that. And I haven't heard of any either. So unfortunately, I don't have the knowledge to answer that.
I'll follow up on that. Actually, I'll let Representative Tuck go first, and then I'll follow up.
Oh, okay. Mine's on a different subject. Sorry about that.
Oh, no, you're fine.
But the third-party oversight, did you list that already? What are some of the organizations that are the third-party oversights in these projects?
Yep. Through the chair. Representative Tuck, some of them would be like the Alaska Center of Energy and Power at UAF, okay, National Reliable Renewable Energy Lab, NREL, National Energy Technology Lab.
And Mr. Chair, is that part of their grant, is that they have to budget for those third-party oversights, or is that something that the administration budgets in? So how is that figured out?
Through the chair. Representative Tuck, the third-party oversight is actually going to be funded by us who are administrating this grant. So the grantee will not have to pick up that third-party oversight.
And one last one, Mr. Chair. And do they do the inspections also? Are they actually expecting to make sure that the everything is not only in order as far as their paperwork and everything else, and that it may work probably work, but that the installations are done properly as well?
Through the chair. Representative Tuck, that is, whether it's third-party oversight or our own AEA in-house expertise, someone will be looking into the oversight of the projects.
Okay. Let me. I had a question. What in the past have you guys approved, and how successful has the implementation after that been?
For the record, I'm Peter Krimp, Deputy Director of Alternative Energy and Energy Efficiency. Just to be clear, this is our first round for the Emerging Energy Technology Fund, and I'll be talking about the Renewable Energy Fund soon. And there is, of course, some relation between them. But if I might answer that question, since Barbara is a new staff member and hasn't been involved in the Denali Commission's Emerging Energy Technology Fund. There were a wide array of projects, but the sorts of projects that have been funded in the past, hydrokinetic devices, that is using the flow of water either in rivers or in tidal areas, such things as the pellet boiler over at Sea Alaska Building, I think that's a fairly visible. The fuel hopper is standing out there on the north side of the building. Things like the cyprophilic, I'm not sure if I have that right, but a kind of bacteria that digests biomass. So pretty much a very wide array of devices, things that will help the integration of wind energy into diesel systems, that newer technology. Those sorts of things have been funded in the past and likely we'll be seeing something similar, as well probably as some fossil fuel related projects, which would only make sense.
Okay. Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And currently that fund is capitalized with how much?
It's going to be 2.4 from the state and 2.4 from the Denali Commission.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And do you anticipate that we'll need additional funding for this in the future? Are you getting enough interest that you think that that's not going to be a sufficient amount?
If I may, the chair, Representative Peterson, we don't really know, to tell you the truth. On March 2nd, it will be very telling to see what proposals come in and what the quality of the proposals are going to be.
If I might follow up, then maybe before we adjourn this year, maybe you could come back and give us an update on what has taken place and, you know, some ideas you might have about future funding needs.
Certainly will. Thank you.
Yeah. All right.
I guess one more question.
Representative Sadler.
To the chair, Peter, I guess some of this went by kind of fast, actually, but the advisory committee that's going to review these proposals, what's the membership of the advisory committee?
Sure. Barbara,
you bet. I've got the list. So we have on the advisory committee, Brent Petrie from AVAC.
Okay.
Brent Sheets from Nettle. National Energy Technology Lab.
Fewer acronyms for this slow guy. Nettle. Nettle.
Energy Technology Labs.
Okay.
And then we have Joel Niemeyer from the Denali Commission, Brian Hirsch from the National Renewable Energy Lab,
Yep.
And then we have Eric Erickson from Alaska Electric Light and Power.
Okay.
And then we have Carl Raisha.
Easy for you to say.
From Ada.
And a good brief follow-up. So the folks from the National Energy Technology Lab, NETL, and the National Renewable Energy Lab, are they located in Alaska? Or are they in Portland or Seattle or D.C.? Where are they located at? Where do they work from?
They're all from within Alaska.
Okay. All right.
All right. Anyone else in the committee have any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, and going back to the third-party oversight, because I noticed that there's two board members that are probably have some overseeing in that. How is it determined which one of those departments are going to be, or which one of those agencies are going to be looking at the oversight, or do they all have part in the oversight of those projects?
Through the chair. Representative Tuck, I think it's going to depend on what projects are coming in. So who's got some expertise in doing some third-party oversight. And so I don't think we haven't nailed down who's doing specific roles, but we know that these are all resources to reach out to for the third-party oversight.
Yes, sir. Go ahead. And so is that third-party oversight volunteer services? Are those going to be contracts? And if so, how is that going to be determined? I know you have these here as resources to be able to look into and decide, but is there a process in on how that's going to be decided?
Through the chair. Representative Tuck, I don't think right now we don't have anything specific on step-by-step of how we're going to determine who's going to do what. All of the third-party oversight, though, will be contracted out, and it will not come out of the grantees amount. It's actually going to be funded through the administration of this grant. So that'll be a different fund of money that's coming out of.
And Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so are you going to be looking for fund requests in the future to finance these contracts, or is that already being budgeted through your department, through AEA?
Through the chair. Representative Tuck, it's already budgeted. So we're ready to start actually using that oversight right away.
Okay. Any other questions? Well, thank you, Barbara, for taking the time to come out, and we really appreciate this. Next, I believe, we have Peter Krimp, correct?
Yes.
He will be speaking on the Alaska Renewable Energy Fund program status. And again, if you hold any questions and for the proper time, that would be great.
I think I've already introduced myself, but Peter Krimp, Deputy Director, Alternative Energy and Energy Efficiency. This is, we recently delivered our fourth round package to the legislature. Hopefully each one of you has received a CD and that contains the project that are recommended, the rankings, and a status report, evaluation guidelines, etc. Fair game for any questions on that, and I'll do my best to respond. What I did want to give here was a status report for the first three rounds of the Renewable Energy Fund. I've been told to sometimes pictures are welcome and sometimes they're not. I did put the pictures toward the end if people don't want to look at them. I'll launch in here. As you may remember, House Bill 152 passed in 2008, and that established the Renewable Energy Fund. There were a number of selection criteria. They are on that slide, but the most important one was the highest weight given to the high-cost energy areas. and AEA has gone ahead and regulations and through requests for applications, the solicitations on coming up with a the guidelines for ranking and going through the review of these applications. We do have an advisory committee that helps us develop methods. Unlike the Emerging Energy Technology Fund, however, the advisory committee does not have a hand in selecting the projects. The project recommendations are done primarily by Alaska Energy Authority staff, ICER, through the economic analysis, and also the Department of Natural Resources. To date, we have $150 million in projects that hasn't been appropriated. Somewhere over 125 projects, and for fiscal year 11, the package that we just delivered, AEA is recommending up to $66 million. Or excuse me. Oh, that's a typo. I'm sorry. $37 million in fiscal year 11. That should be $37 million in that last bullet. I won't go through the review process except in detail, except to say that there are four stages. Stage one separates wheat from the chaff, basically. What projects are eligible, fairly clear-cut criteria, the types of projects and the applicants. Based on that, we did end up rejecting five this last time around. Stage two and three are where AEA staff experts performs the technical review. AEA has staff with expertise in hydro, biomass, wind energy, hydrokinetics, geothermal, et cetera. So those staff take the lead. We also have a component of economic analysis. We hired five private economic firms to do life cycle economic analysis on the proposals. That is to assess whether the projects are inherently economic, whether they make economic sense in the first place. And so AEA has and ICER have spent a lot of resources coming up with the economics that is weighted very heavily in the review and the recommendations. Stage three, we rank the proposals from high score to the lowest score. For this last go-around, about a third of the projects were not recommended to go forward, about a third of the projects were recommended for only partial funding, and about a third of the projects were recommended for full funding. In stage four, we work with the advisory committee to adjust that ranking so that we get a statewide balance of some to adjust to achieve more of a statewide balance in the recommendations. So for areas, this last time it was the North Slope and Bristol Bay, which were underrepresented, we ended up bumping some of those up in priority, for instance. And we have a certain methodology to do that, which is written down. In terms of after the projects are up and running, AEA assigns technical and grant staff to work with the grantees to establish the grants, and we reimburse from costs that have already been expended by the grantees. But we do allow in advance because we understand that there are some grantees, especially rural communities, that are somewhat cash poor. However, there are pretty hard rules for when money can be released. Certainly for a construction project, we need to see certain things, such as the permitting complete, the final design complete, and all the financing. Otherwise, we would end up with half-built projects, and that's what we're avoiding. In terms to date, about half of the 157 million, because we had a kind of a precursor round that was funded by AEA capital funds and Denali Commission funds. But about half of the projects has gone into wind, about a quarter into hydro, maybe one-eighth into biomass, and then heat recovery, geothermal, and then some of the other ones much smaller. Solar is a very small component, for instance. In terms of the project completion, we have this cumulative bar graph shows that at the end of 2010, we had completed 23 projects, and generally they fall into three categories: feasibility, design, and construction. Most of the funds are in construction, and I'll show you a graph there in a second, but 11 construction projects are completed at this point. By the end of 2011, we expect that 79 projects will be complete, so we've had two full construction seasons at this point, and we're expecting much of the work finally will be completed this year. By the year 2012, somewhere around 100 projects will be completed, and of course it depends on what this current fiscal year or next fiscal year's appropriation is for round four, how many more projects come onto this this graph. Oh, and I should say that this graph does not include the about 24 projects that are not yet that have not we don't have a schedule for yet because for some of the round three projects they're not quite ready.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Help me interpret this graph a little bit. So looking at 2010, the legend says number of projects completed. Does that mean that 11 projects are the construction phase has been completed for two projects, the design phase has been completed?
That's correct.
Okay, so that doesn't mean we've got 23 all done.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. When I say projects, I'll a phase of a project. Okay. In many cases, what will happen, a feasibility, which costs very little compared to a construction project, will show that a project's not going to pan out.
That's a completed project.
Yeah, it's completed. Now we know that it's not something that the state should put any more money into.
I was assuming that they had to go through feasibility, design, construction to be complete.
I see.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Let's see. In terms of performance, this next graph shows cumulative fuel savings. For projects that have been completed and projects that are expected to be completed. And the 2009 and 2010 fuel savings per year figures are for projects that are complete. These are real numbers. The 2011 through 2015 are projected savings in diesel, diesel equivalent, I should say. I'm gonna have to apologize. I have the y-axis $1 million per year should be million gallons per year. That was my mistake.
Okay.
It's a million gallons per year of diesel. And you can see the breakdown by year. In 2009 and 2010, much of the diesel that has been displaced is in Pillar Mountain, in the Kodiak Pillar Mountain wind project. And I did bring these bar graphs out for the construction projects that give the detailed schedule for when we expect all the construction projects to be completed. in 2000, by the end of this year, we're expecting about 1.5 million gallons, again, not dollars, I apologize, of diesel to be displaced. Again, much of it in wind, and a fair amount in hydro and biomass. And that figure goes up to about 3 million gallons in 2012. And by 2013, about 6 million gallons of diesel equivalent are being displaced. You can see the large amount in biomass, the green color, in 2013 is when the Anchorage landfill gas to energy, to electricity project comes online.
Great.
And then we also will have Cordova Humpback Creek project in 2012, and that's why the hydro gallons displaced goes up pretty significantly too. Again, this does not include 24 projects for which we do not have a schedule, and that we do discuss in more detail in the status report that I prepared. I have a number of slides of actual projects. I wonder, Mr. Chair, if you would like to, if there are any general questions on the presentation.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On one of the slides, you were talking about how much money had been appropriated. It was 90-some million, I believe it was. And or 157 million. How much money is there in the renewable energy fund, and do you anticipate needing more money to be added to that fund?
The through the chair, Representative Peterson, the intent of the legislature, as you know, is $50 million per year. The governor's budget for fiscal year 12 is $25 million. AEA's review has indicated about $37 million in projects that we think are reasonable to fund. That is to say, in many cases, we do not feel a number of the projects it made sense to recommend funding for. In some cases, they just were not ready to commit to construction when the final design and permitting weren't done. But $37 million, we feel could, for this next round, would be a reasonable amount. The governor's budget, and of course we work for the governor, is $25
million. So, to follow up.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, was there any funding left over from previous years that could be used to make up that difference?
Yes. Through the chair, Rep. Peterson, to date, and it's a moving target, but about $4 million from earlier rounds, we are deobligating because the projects, for one reason or not, are not going forward. And that could be that they decided that at a milestone that it was a no-go, or they were not able to get a power purchase agreement, or they decided that it wasn't worthwhile to move ahead with the project from their own business arrangement. Mm-hmm. So yes, those dollars, at least $4 million now, is ready to be reallocated, and we think it's going to be considerably more than that.
Okay, thank you.
Real quick, I want to go back just briefly. I think you touched on it, but if you could just clarify, what conditions are on the allowances when we give them out? What are the conditions that we? I'll let you answer that, and then I probably have a follow up.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, I think so. For the grants that AEA puts out, the sorts of conditions.
Yeah.
Is that the question?
Yes.
Well, they're very, very detailed. The standard grant is 30 plus pages, I believe. But when it comes right down to it, for a a final design or, no, say, a construction project, because that's where the most of the money is. About 80% of the dollars are in construction projects. We will usually have milestones that need to be achieved. And, again, that's things like AEA needs to accept the final design. We'll want to know that this is a viable project, that there is a power purchase agreement with a utility. If this is an independent power producer, if it is an independent business, they're going to need to show that they can make a business case and someone is going to buy the power. That the project financing is in place. And so we have, of those 24, for instance, we have one project in Prince of Wales Island, Reynolds Creek Hydro, which does not yet have the final design and the final the budget numbers for financing the project. They need to do a little more work. So that will need to, that is a particular provision of that grant special to that project, milestone that needs to be completed before any construction funds are released. So I think really following the money is generally is what the grants are doing, metering it out according to progress on the schedule.
Okay. All right. That's good. Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In regards to, you had mentioned $25 million was funded last year, and then $32 million are other projects that the AEA deems as feasible. And I believe that there are other projects out there, correct, that would like to be funded, but those aren't in the $32 million because, is it only because they're not feasible? For example, you put a Met Tower up somewhere and find out that there's not enough wind there, or are there other reasons why the other projects don't fall within the $32 million category?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, yes, there's a whole wide array of reasons, and in the package that we sent to the legislature, generally this is the hard part, turning projects down, and we need to be very, very clear as to why and what the reasons are. If the economics are just so poor that they're nowhere near being economically feasible, generally that's a reason that a project is turned down. For instance, our life cycle economic analysis has shown that photovoltaic, solar energy, solar to electric power, just doesn't make sense. And the economics, in many cases, and this is a site-specific situation, but generally speaking, the capital cost of a project over its 30-year life is not paid back by the savings, even figuring what the escalating oil prices according to the USDOE's numbers. So in some cases, their projects were poorly written, poorly defined, and we just were not able to find they were technically viable. There are some projects that our engineering staff just doesn't think will work, or not very well defined. And so we did try to lay that out in as much detail and as fairly as we could. And
follow up?
Yeah.
Thank you. In last year, there was an effort to fully fund that at the $50 million level. Do you foresee down the road, like, for example, next year, that there are going to be more projects that could be coming online and therefore it would be more appropriate to fund at a higher level, or do you think the current levels are satisfactory for now?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, my gut feeling, and I have worked for AEA for a long time, is that there are many more good projects out there, and that it is a matter of doing project development work, particularly in rural communities that have limited capacity, that there are programs at AEA and other university and other places that could be brought to bear to help bring along projects. And my feeling is yes, that there are many good projects and the $50 million intent is there. Of course, that that is up to the legislature for the allocation of funds.
Thank you.
Anyone else have questions before he proceeds? All right, please proceed.
Thank you. I'll just run pretty quickly through some of the pictures of the projects we have, just to give you an idea that these are projects that are constructed and that are moving forward. Sometimes just looking at pieces of paper, we forget that they're real projects that are happening and that are out there. False Creek Hydro, Gustavus, this was completed in 2009. It's an 800-kilowatt project. This is the intake. It's saving now about 127,000 gallons per year of diesel. The RE fund grant was $750,000. It was about a $10.2 million project. If you look at, just to give an idea of the economics for this project, when you look at the total project cost, the $10.2 million, at a $4 diesel, that's about a $500,000 per year in savings. A $500,000 divided into 10.2 is about a 20-year payback. Generally speaking, hydro projects have a 30 to 50-year life. And so this is a project that brings down the cost of energy over the long term. Gustavus is pretty happy about having the diesel generators turned off.
Yeah.
Then, of course, the Pillar Mountain Wind Project, that's sort of a poster child of Renewable Energy Fund projects. These are highly economic project. For all of the kilowatt hours that are produced in Kodiak, Kodiak Electric figures this is saving about 1.6 cents per kilowatt hour. And savings then the for every wind kilowatt hour produced, it's saving about 10, 11 cents. And that's at $2.60 fuel. So obviously, if fuel doubles, that that price or that savings goes up too. Again, that's a highly economic project. This project has not panned out so well. This is the Denali Solar Thermal Project. We're hoping that 2010, it only saved about 180 gallons. It was expected to save 5,700. They're still fairly optimistic that they just have some distribution problems that will kind of rectify the poorer than expected savings. Unalakleet Wind, this is a 600-kilowatt project. It came online in 2010, but due to integration issues, it hasn't been working as up to capacity. AEA is working with UVEC to rectify that, and we think this project will be excellent, and the 90,000 gallons per year will be achieved. But I guess to say that this project is, we are collecting data on these projects, and we will share it with the legislature in an open way.
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you partly answered the question, actually, and that was I had noticed that these wind turbines look similar to the ones in Kodiak, and I was going to ask if they're the same size. I see there's 600 kW in Unalakleet versus 4.5. Megawatts there in Kodiak, and I assume there's more in Kodiak. And so then my next question was, I see the performance in Kodiak looks like it's very good, but I think you mentioned there are some bugs there in Unalakleet that will be worked out and things should be just fine there. Is that correct?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Foster, these are a lot smaller turbines. These are 100-kilowatt turbines. These are the Northwind 100, which are, generally speaking, these are the turbines that are in the greatest usage in the rural part of the state. There are 1.5 megawatt turbines in GE, 1.5 megawatt turbines in Kodiak. And those are the big utility, or the large turbines that you'll see in Hawaii and in the lower 48 often. A lot less expensive per capacity installed. But getting to the integration issues, and this is something that I I think it's important to say that it takes usually about a year for any construction project to dial in, to get the bugs worked out of it. We're not disappointed at all in the performance to date of this UVEC project. They've had some overvoltage problems with the distribution between the utility and the wind turbines, and we're working on a technical fix now. We have high hopes for this the Unalak Lake project.
I just wanted to underscore what you just said, and that was seems like it takes about a year when you're dealing with the wind farms and to kind of just tweak things and get them going good, and I think in the long term they're gonna be a real payoff. And I think as we've seen in sites such as Kotzebue that have been around for a while, things are going well. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, with all the potential wind projects that are either being built or on the drawing board, integration into the system is a problem that we're going to have to solve in every one of these projects. Do we have a computer program that helps with integration, or do you go outside to a consultant to get help with that, or what's the process with integration right now?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, the systems, the switchgear for integrating the wind systems has just moved, advanced very greatly over the last 5 years. Northern Power, which sells the Northwind turbines, has a very robust interface with the systems. There are specific issues, such as what do you do with the energy when you don't have a use for it? Well, generally speaking, you use a dump load or a secondary load, often an electric boiler at one of the large buildings. And so you need to figure that into the design. But on the other hand, it's not that big of a deal. The problems in Unalak Lake just happen to be ones in which there wasn't quite as much transmission as we were expecting between the wind farm and the diesel power system. But generally speaking, they've gotten so that they're off shelf. The systems can be purchased, again, tailored very uniquely to the system. Now, that said, there are a lot of people that are experimenting and using newer ideas, such as dispatchable loads at residences, so that if there's excess energy, some of the systems in Quig and Kong would shunt the power over to a household system to provide heat for the household. So there are many variations on this. Generally speaking, we're getting there.
Okay.
Okay, please continue.
North Pole Heat Recovery, this is up at Golden Valley Electric. We have just a few months of performance in this project in 2010. It was completed in early 2010, but missed the early part of the heating season. This provides heat to North Golden Valley's naphtha-fired power plant in North Pole. Instead of running resistance heaters there. So as you can see, we're expecting to get 99,000 gallons displacement of naphtha, not of diesel, about the same fuel. And it's much less than that. But again, Golden Valley's engineers are expecting that project to work okay. I do have a picture of this on the of the boilers in for this project in Gulcana. This is stick-fired units, Garn boilers that are coming into to usage a lot in the rural areas. They're clean-burning hand-fed boilers. So far, this project in Gulcana has saved about 3,000 gallons, and that was part of October, November, and December. expected around 15,000 gallons, and we think that's a fairly conservative figure. The Tokes wood-fired boiler just came online in, I believe, November. This is a big boiler. This is a 5.5 million BTU per hour boiler. To give you an idea, usual residence is about 100,000 BTUs per hour. So this is somewhere around 50 times the size of a normal residence. This heats the school, displaces or will displace about 50,000 gallons per year. It just had its ribbon cutting in January. Unfortunately, we had a renewable energy fund meeting right then, so I wasn't able to get to it. But this is a great project. You can see the fuel, the chip fuel, being conveyed up to the boiler there. And this project uses the wood, which is harvested for wildfire mitigation around Tok, to fuel it. So the legislature did provide funding for that chipper up in the upper right. So far, 15,000 gallons displaced, we're estimating. This is a project which makes firewood from decked logs in Cordova. This equipment cost about $148,000 in renewable energy fund, and that was matched by other local dollars. They're looking to make firewood that displaces about 90,000 gallons per year. So far, they've cut wood that would displace 7,600 gallons or so. I guess that's it for the pictures. I'm happy to answer any other questions, Mr. Chair.
I have a couple questions that I noticed as going through here, there's different percentages that funds are allocated to certain projects over another. What determines the percentage that we're going to grant them over the full cost?
Sure. Yeah, Mr. Chair, there are no guidelines that have been established for a minimum amount of match for projects. The advisory committee didn't feel that was appropriate because communities have varying amounts of ability to provide matching. However, projects that have a higher match are ranked higher. So therefore, if there is a non-state match, or I shouldn't say a non-renewable energy fund match, the higher that is, the more likely a project is in getting funded, i.e. more skin in the game.
Okay. And also, is the economic feasibility of one of the projects, is it based on the full cost of the project or the cost less what we grant them?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that is based on the full cost of the project.
Okay.
We feel that it is the appropriate role of the Renewable Energy Fund to make good projects better, not to subsidize projects that are not inherently economic.
Okay. Any other members have any questions? All right. Well, seeing none, I'd like to thank you, Peter, for taking the time to come and present this. I don't know about the rest of the panel, but I think this is very informative, shows what you've been doing, some exciting stuff here. With that being said, I also thank Barbara for being here. Thank our the committee aides and all of those that are helping our recorders. The next energy meeting will be on Thursday at 3 o'clock. I will remind Representative Lynn that his phone went off, so I think we all owe us donuts, don't
yes,
you?
I think so.
All right. Well, thank you again. Anything before we gavel out? All right. This meeting is adjourned.